You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to welcome Jay Widener, who returns to the show. Called by Wired Magazine an authority on the Hermetic and alchemical traditions, and erudite conspiracy hunter, Jay Widener is a renowned author, filmmaker, and Hermetic scholar. Considered to be a modern-day Indiana Jones for his ongoing worldwide quests to find clues. I'm not really reading this. This is all I memorized this. Quests to find clues to mankind's spiritual destiny via ancient societies and artifacts, his body of work offers great insight into the circumstances that have led to the current global crisis. He is the producer of the documentary films 2012 The Odyssey, its sequel, Time Wave 2013, and is the director of the forthcoming feature documentary, Infinity, The Ultimate Trip. He is currently in the completion stage of this feature documentary, Infinity, on Death and the Afterlife, featuring numerous authors such as Daniel Brinkley, Dr. Albert Neil Donald Walsh, and many other spiritual luminaries. So let's have a fireside chat with Jay right now. Hi, Jay. Welcome back.
Hey, I'm just getting my hands warm here.
Good. I'm getting warmed up myself. I know we'll be able to do this.
Yeah, yeah. Global warming, of course, is here, and it's about 30 degrees below normal here. So,
oh, geez.
Get warm by the fire here and talk.
Wow. Well, I usually have a fire in my fireplace so that I'm literally having a fireside chat, but lately it's been smoking a bit, so I decided to choose clarity over warmth.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading your article section today on your site, and I just want to mention it now in case people want to go there, which is www.jaywidener, that's jaywidener.com. And on the articles page, there's some new information there that I hadn't noticed before. And I'm telling you, it was like my jaw dropped onto the desk when I read the first few articles, especially the ones about Stanley Kubrick. Would you, can we kind of start out with the article on Stanley Kubrick's 2001 Space Odyssey and some of the amazing synchronicities that are occurring there?
Well, the whole entire Stanley Kubrick Odyssey, not just 2001, but the entire work of Stanley Kubrick is... really has to almost be understood by stepping back as far away as you can and taking a wide look at it. And Stanley's obsessed with time. If you watch his third film, The Killing, it's intercut between many different times. This is way before the film Memento or any of these modern films. This was 1956, and when you move forward to Dr. Strangelove, again, we're intercutting not between different times, we're in the same time, but time is different, even though it's at the same time. So when you're on the bomber, time is going fast, but when you're in the president's conference in the war room, time is moving very slow.
Right.
When you're in the trying to get the code from General Jack Ripper, time is moving at it's slower than erosion. Jack isn't going to tell you what the code is, the recall
right.
code. So 2001 again is doing the old MF with time too, because, you know, we have the ape cutting in 1/24th of a second between his throat bone and into a spaceship orbiting the Earth, you know, 4 million years later. And we don't really know what time it is on Earth when the space child returns, the star child returns at the end of the film. And when you read my article, Alchemical Kubrick, Part 1, 2001, the great work on the great work on film, you'll see that it's a conscious thing that Stanley Kubrick is doing. He's designing the film to be an initiation. When you wend together the other two articles that I have about Kubrick and then what I have now discovered about the films of Stanley Kubrick, an eye-opening expose is at hand, and one I'm intending to get out here soon, I hope. But basically, Stanley Kubrick cut a deal, I believe, with the U.S. government to fake the moon landings. And I'm not saying they didn't go to the moon. They did go to the moon. They went to the moon. They brought back moon rocks. They put reflectors on the moon. They've done all sorts of stuff. Believe me, they've been on the moon a long time. But they didn't go the way that we were shown in the moon landings. Mm-hmm. That was faked by Kubrick. And in exchange, Kubrick cut a deal that he would be able to do the kinds of movies that he wanted to do. And the first of these kinds of movies was 2001, A Space Odyssey, of course, in which he not only embedded tons of alchemical and esoteric information into the symbols and into the script, but you can use it as a springboard to understand the bigger story that Stanley is telling, which is unveiled through the rest of his films very secretly. Mm. And that is that this world is ruled by a group of people who are very, very advanced and who have apparently a secret space program of which they're hiding from us and engage in, I can't really say time travel, but in they have a curious relationship to linear time in that they appear to be able to move in and out of it. This is according to the films of Kubrick, not my opinion. And these people also have the ability to, they like to have, they're into deep and dark sexual practices. I'll try to be as nice about it as I can.
Right.
And through the films, especially all the films that follow 2001, is a long litany of an expose of a dark sex magic cult that rules the world. And it's all done very, very, very subliminally and is a treasure trove that literally, like a zip file, when you open it, it just keeps pouring out and pouring out. At this point, I don't even know how to piece it all together because the amount of information coming out is so astonishing that I don't know what to say.
Well, it's hidden right there in front of us, and I would say his movie Eyes Wide Shut is probably the closest to actually coming out and exposing that side of life as kind of a fictional movie, except that he's most likely playing it down quite a bit, and I think you mentioned in your article that there were some scenes that were cut out of it, unfortunately, that the producers didn't really want to get out there. And then
there's incredible continuity breaks at certain points in Eyes Wide Shut, which just do not and are impossible for a man of Stanley Kubrick's discipline to have allowed. And that's, I can't really tell you what happened in between these continuity errors, but there's something cut out. And that happens several times in the movie. And it's at those continuity error breaks that we can tell that something has changed and that it was not left in the way that Stanley would have wanted it. Mm. But I can't, beyond that, because Warner Brothers won't release the final cut by Kubrick, the director's cut, which I think he deserved. I mean, my goodness, it's his last film. least they can do. They release Ridley Scott's director cuts. They release Steven Spielberg's director cuts. Why can't they release the director's cut of Eyes Wide Shut? And but they're not, and so we can't hope for that anymore. But yeah, I would say that there's a deep and dark undertone to Eyes Wide Shut, which no one, well, there's one guy on the web, an alchemist, who has touched on it, and but it's quite an astonishing group of films, and one day I will write either my film or my book about this whole thing and get it all down in some sort of order. But I tell you, it is such a trip to sit in front of my big screen TV with Blu-ray Stanley Kubrick films and step through them slowly and discover one marvel after another.
Well, now I'm going to have to go back and watch them because you astutely wrote that you didn't take a Shining right away to his movie, The Shining. And I'm with you on that one. For whatever reason, I never... It went over my head. I took it on a very literal basis. But when you explain the synchronicities and what's really going on there, it just makes me feel like an idiot that I, you know, of course, you don't know until you know, and, you know.
Now, the secret stays secret until it reveals itself. And, you know, it's like Schopenhauer said, at first when you say something unusual, everyone, you know, discounts it. Then the second time they hear it, they just shrug their heads and ignore it. Then the third time they act like, you know, everybody knew it all along. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're going to find with Kubrick in 10 years. I'll be long forgotten, and it'll just be common knowledge. There'll probably be films made about him as an alchemist and all sorts of things because it will happen here over the next 10, 15 years, I predict. Just as I predicted, by the way, I believe I've only been on your show once, right? Is that not
correct?
True? Yeah, I believe the last time I was on your show was in April 2008.
That sounds right.
Yeah, and if you listen to that show, which somebody has put on the internet, I don't know who, up on YouTube, but somebody wrote to me today about it. Apparently in that show I predicted the economic downfall of the fall. And so I'm going to have to listen to it because I can't remember, but... So, you know, it's not hard when you make a study of things to predict. It doesn't take psychic ability.
Right.
And I predict there's a lot of things that are coming down the pike, and they aren't, you know, they have nothing to do with me being a fortune teller or insanity.
Right.
I'm just a guy who reads a lot and then extrapolates forward. And maybe I have some psychic ability which aids me that I'm unaware of.
Right.
Because it certainly doesn't help me with my investments or anything else.
Well, I'm with you on that one. I listen to my guests, and sometimes I'll hear something later that I didn't hear the first time. Again, it seems to depend on how awake I am in that moment, and it seems to change from day to day. So I try to put on my memory cap every day so I don't forget everything I've remembered up to that point, but it doesn't always work, and sometimes I forget to put it on.
Yeah, well, we all have our fading moments.
Really.
Sure. Yeah, as the world gets crazier and crazier.
Well, yes. Now, to what do you attribute that? You mentioned also, I mean, we could go into the numerous prophecies that you studied from ancient artifacts, from the Egyptian pyramids to the cross at Hende to the Hindu artifacts, and I mean, Mayan, it goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And according to the Mayan calendar, we are just entered into the sixth night, so we're getting close to wrapping up these TikToks that they claim are the nine levels of consciousness that are supposed to be arriving soon.
Yes, I'm. Yes, It is. It's unscrewing itself. But what's really going on is that there is a there's a hardening of time, where time is a vortex, and we're moving down towards the tip. We're slowly cycling our way down towards the tip of this vortex. And as we cycle down, the concentric circles grow tighter and faster. Mm-hmm. So each circle around is faster, but also closer to the last one, and a reflection as the circle above and the circle below in a vortex spiral are very similar to each other. They're kind of mirrors, so you kind of, whereas it would take 25 years to go from World War II to World War One to World War II, it only took a few years to go from Vietnam to the Gulf War, and now we're seeing, you know, two wars that were right next to each other. So we're fighting a two-front war that started, you know, within a year of each other. And, you know, at this point, we'll start seeing, you know, reflections of this densification of time happening as we approach the tip. And like the tip of a tornado, which is as hard as a diamond, even though it's only spinning air, when you have spinning time, it also is as hard as a diamond is in the, whatever a diamond is, in the fourth dimension, which is what time is. And that's when things get really weird, because at that point, the circles near the tip begin crossing themselves. And when they begin crossing themselves, which is really what hardens up time, then you can go forward and backwards. But what's really going on with this Mayan thing is that as you approach, the funnel, the bottom funnel of this, of the time vortex, there's back waves, like in physics, when waves hit a wall and they come back and they're underneath the advancing wave. There's back waves which strike the valence, the membrane of time, the cone, the vortice cone, the tetrahedral. If you take a tetrahedron and you look at it, you can see that it's like a squared off tornado. And so we're approaching now very quickly this point, and all of our reaction times are shortened, and so a mistake is sure to be made. In fact, what's going on actually is they're making a mistake a day or so about right now. Almost every day they're passing another law, which is just going to make everything much worse.
Yeah.
When we hit the eye at the very, very end of this trip, down the vortice, and then we're going to hit the eye, and then there will be no time. And that's what we mean by the end of time.
Well, now, that brings up a few questions. Isn't the, at least the government and the shadow government, the one that you talked about that has the second space program, they're fully aware of all this, aren't they?
They are.
And so, but it seems that they're doing everything they can to halt this process, or at least to keep us from entering into it. But that seems like an inevitable process for us, as far as what you're describing.
Well, it is, because the actions of them are not easy to understand. And so we must realize that there is there's something afoot with them that doesn't make sense in the human realm. Now, what I'm about to say, are we going to a break or anything?
No.
Okay. I'm about to say is going to sound very controversial, but I'll give you a quick breakdown of what's probably going on.
Okay. Good.
The powers that be are ruled by an inner group. And we will have a video series out next year called The Sacred Geometry of Time with Robert Lawler, which was going to explain this in a much deeper way. But this group apparently knows all of the knowledge of the past. It's maybe as far back as several hundred thousand years.
Okay.
And they live here on Earth, and they have lived here for a long time. But they've lived separately until about 6,000 years ago. They lived separately from us. In some place on Earth, in a very nice place. But about 6,000 years ago, the first of many alarms went off. And these alarms have to do with the advance of a, well, what we call the end of the Kali Yuga. Now, the beginning of the Kali Yuga was right at the beginning, right near the beginning of the Mayan calendar, 3114 BC. And this is the beginning of cities and writing and kingships and slavery and women as chattel and animal husbandry and farming and wars and walled cities and writing and science and all those things actually began at the beginning of the Kali Yuga. Not because we were getting better, but because we were getting worse. Okay, but not because we were getting worse because there's something going on. The reason those things came into being is because this group that are human but are different went into action. Because at the beginning of the Kali Yuga, 6,000 years ago, the beginning of the Mayan calendar, was a signal. A signal in a very long, long, long calendar. Not 6,000 years, but like 60,000 years.
Okay.
And it said that the end of this age was going to come to an end, and the prophecy said that the sun would explode into gigantic solar flares, which would fry everything on Earth and cause huge Earth changes here on the planet. And this group knew all of this because they had been through it before and they kept accurate records. So they went into action and they took a lovely planet filled with tribes of hunter-gatherers and they transformed it into civilization. And they transformed it into civilization so that they could get out of here before the coronal mass ejections hit. And that is what has been going on for over 5,000, almost 6,000 years, is a central organizing principle decided and governed by a group that we don't even really know who they really are, for purposes which until recently have remained completely hidden and secret. You know, and they promised the managers that they're leaving behind that they can have the underground shelters and everything. But I don't think that that's really going to help because I just can't see how that could survive what is foretold.
What's coming.
And that's really what's happening. And the secret space program and all of these things, flying saucers and bases on the moon and the Nazis and Joseph Farrell's great work on the alchemy that the Nazis were doing. This is all part of this group developing the technology for what I call Project Good, which stands for Get Out of Dodge. And they're getting out of Dodge, baby, and they're almost out. And if you follow the work of William Grimsley, you know, I don't know if you know who he is. He's has these night vision goggles, and he goes out at night and he videotapes these craft that you can't see with your eyes. You can type them in on Google or YouTube. They got a few astounding, astounding videos that he's taken.
Oh, good.
Of these gigantic craft, and that's the story. And I figure I might as well get it out now because you never know when it's going to be too late.
Well, absolutely. Now, of course, some people attach names to these unknowns, and I have read some accounts that these are some kind of an Anunnaki slash Atlantean lines, and then, of course, you have some kind of Illuminati bloodlines flowing in there, but nobody seems to really know who they are, except that they're not.
Well, yeah, actually, we do.
You do?
They are. The Anunnaki is one of the words that they have. The Nephilim is another word that they have. These are words created by different cultures, the Hebrews, the Babylonians, the Sumerians, you know, the Persians, to describe these people. Okay, but their real name is very easy because it describes where they go when they get out of Dodge. And they're called the Aryans. And Aryans are called, Aryans is just another word for Martians. Because Aries is Mars. And they escaped the end of the last Kali Yuga I think at the end of every Kali Yuga, the same cycle occurs every time. It may even be why there is a Kali Yuga. They come to Earth after the Earth is healed from the gigantic coronal mass ejections which occur, and they come back in their ships and they repopulate the Earth. They may even take genetic strains with them, which is what the Genome Project is. They may take all the seeds with them, which is what the Seed Project is. And they take it there and they bury themselves under, because Mars is a pretty inhospitable place, and they wait for the Earth to recover. And they came back 60,000 years ago, and they thought that, you know, that the Earth had pretty much been wiped out, but a few groups had, survived. The Native Americans had survived by being in caves, and they tell those stories about how hot it was, so hot that you stuck a stick out the cave opening and it lit on fire. The Chinese survived. Somebody, one of those Asian groups must have survived, obviously. And some of the Africans survived.
Wow.
And when the Aryans landed, they kept to themselves, but they did have ships, and they went around, and they had an order that they couldn't have any sex with the remnants that were left behind. They could help them. They could teach them how to read and write and how to farm and all the other things, but they couldn't have sex with them. But, you know, those Earth women and the way they move, they just couldn't resist. And so these are humans, but they went to Mars for a long time, and they lost the pigment in their skin. They lost the color in their hair. Their eyes turned blue, green, hazel. They were tremendously big because of the low gravity when they landed here. Very advanced, super advanced, and they've been here for a very, very long time, and they're leaving, and they're going. They're leaving now. There's colonies. I know this sounds completely out of my mind, but I have proof for all this. There's colonies up on Mars. Just type in Hale Crater Civilization on Google. Read Skipper's work, Joseph Skipper's great work on the colony there up in Hale Crater. And this is what's going on. This is the long and short of it. And yeah, they live here. And they actually lived in Norway. That's where they lived because they liked the coolness. They couldn't get used to the heat. And that spiral that exploded over Norway when Obama was going to get his peace prize in Norway.
Yeah,
well, that's our weaponry. Here's the problem, you know, Obama faces, okay? These guys are leaving. They're getting out of here because they think that the coronal mass ejections are coming.
Okay.
All right? Okay? They're leaving, and they don't care who runs the United States anymore. Okay, they did up until last year. Now they don't care anymore. Okay? It was always one of them, by the way.
Oh.
But now they don't care. And so Obama's sitting here, and he's got the remnants of their technology. He's got the stuff sitting around, right? And they're probably busily back engineering the Aryan technology, okay?
Right.
And this is what's going on in Argentina and Chile, where they're raiding the tunnel systems.
This is
the New World Order. These are the managers that have been left behind. The New World Order is not the Aryans. The New World Order is the Aryans' managers.
Right, that would make sense.
Yeah, and this is the Aryans think of themselves as the people of the red, or the people from the red planet. Okay?
Okay.
And when Bauer changed his name to Rothschild, which means Red Shield, he was really signifying that he was the shield for this thing, this project, which moved into high gear, beginning of the industrial age. Everyone thinking that they're deforesting the planet, raping the mountainsides, enslaving people, doing all this stuff just because it's something that has gone out of control. But it isn't. It's all the underpinnings of a huge secret project to develop quickly colonies and ships and moving gigantic amounts of goods and services across the gap between here and Mars. And that's the truth right there. And a lot of people are going to know this pretty soon. I'm not the only one that knows what's going on here. And this is all written down, by the way, in ancient texts from India, all of this.
Oh, yes, yes, that's right. You briefly touched upon that the last time, I think.
Yep. Yeah, this is all ancient texts, and these texts were from the Aryans, and they told their story. And
well, now,
go ahead.
If they are leaving, if they're going, or they have the ability to go back and forth to Mars and further,
yeah,
I'm sure.
They do.
Isn't a coronal mass ejection going to destroy Mars as well?
No, because they're underground. They're going out. If you're first off, it will hit Mars, but it won't be anything like what happens here.
Oh.
Okay. Secondly, it hits. The problem with the coronal mass ejection, which I have to say the film The 2012 did a pretty good job of evoking, is that it is a huge electromagnetic blast, which has a commensurate effect on the core, which is heavily electromagnetic of the Earth.
Right, right.
Okay, so it causes a core flip.
Huh.
Okay, here's how it works. The poles of the sun orbit or rotate every 37 days.
Mm-hmm.
The equator of the sun would also rotate every 37 days, except that the angular momentum of the planets at the equator of the solar system causes it to slow down. So it only rotates at 26 days every instead of 37.
Mm-hmm.
It rotates a little bit faster. Every 87 days, there is a crossing over of the magnetic field as the 26 catches up to the 37 again.
Mm.
You follow me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Every 87 days, there's a small electromagnetic crossing, which encases the sun in an tightly woven electromagnetic shell.
Okay.
After about 13,000 years of this nonsense, the entire sun is bound in a huge, receding quickly electromagnetic field, which has a commensurate effect on the Earth's electromagnetic field, which also begins receding.
Huh.
This is all happening right now with the loss of the sunspots and the Earth's magnetic field receding. Okay, this is all, it's a 13,000 year cycle that we are right on the edge of, and when the sun finally has to right itself, i.e. move its rotational fields back into sync again, which it has to do, there will be a huge electromagnetic storm which will go out way beyond the Earth. It will be carrying with it gigantic coronal mass ejections, which will ignite the forests of the Earth and boil the oceans. And if you're underground on Mars, well, you know, you have a pretty good chance of making it. There's no electromagnetic fields on Mars. There's no tectonic plates.
Oh.
Nothing's going to be spinning around. And, you know, you just wait it out. You just wait it out. And after, you know, a few hundred years, I don't know how long, when the forests grow back and the animal life comes back, then you mount your expeditions and you go back. So we're building not only the expeditions that are going there. What we've been building for the last 300 years is the expeditions that are going to take them back, the ships that are going to take them back here, too.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what's going on. And it recurs all the time. And the Vedic texts and the Mahabharata, this is what they're discussing. And the including the gigantic ships or arcs, as they call them. I want to make one thing clear. I'm not saying white people are Aryans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that white people are the bastard children of Aryans and Earth people.
Okay.
You understand? These are not, they don't look like us at all. They're chalk white. They're freakish kind of looking. They're where the vampire myths come from, because they can only come on the surface of the Earth at night because their skin is so translucent that that you can see the capillary system, and so they look blue in certain kinds of light.
Well, you know, there was a movie that that was made on, it was a remake of The War of the Worlds.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, well, isn't this kind of strange for him to make this kind of movie where they're already underground?
That
and
was
just beamed through those
yes,
laser beams.
Very prescient. Yes, yes. Spielberg has to know. I mean, when I saw that, I just went, "My God, he has to know."
Yeah, oh,
he
absolutely.
He has to know that they've been here the whole time, and they are underground. That's exactly where they are.
Yeah.
And by the way, these other things that we see, and I'm not saying there's not other aliens, and there could be. I'm not even going to argue that. But some of the other things that we've been seeing are their robotic creations, and they've been here, these robotic creations, for a long time, man. And I don't know if they're robotic or they're genetic. I mean, I can't tell. I think sometimes they're robotic, and sometimes they're genetic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have to ask yourself, here's the thing that Obama has to ask himself, all right?
Yeah.
He knows that these guys are leaving. He knows there's a disaster coming of some kind, okay?
Yeah.
They shoot a hyperdimensional weapon over Norway while he's picking up the Peace Prize, right?
Right.
Everybody's, like, screaming and yelling, why does Obama get the Peace Prize? He hasn't done a damn thing, okay? I'm going to tell you why Obama gets the Peace Prize. He gets the Peace Prize so he doesn't shoot at them while they're leaving.
Huh.
Okay? Now, here's the problem that he faces, though, and this is a serious problem.
Yeah.
Okay? You're the Aryans, and you're back on Mars, waiting for the coronal mass ejection. You got the hatches buttoned down, everything, all right?
Okay.
What is to prevent the elites that you've left behind from back engineering the crap that you've left behind,
uh-huh.
the ship, and coming after you and stealing your place and living? Okay, now, I know that sounds crazy, but
it doesn't.
And I'll tell you what, he's worried that they're going to attack us. And that's what that thing in Norway was about.
Huh.
And these people are saying that these are benevolent aliens and stuff. You haven't read your history. The Aryans stormed down. They enslaved all of India. They created the caste system.
Mm-hmm. I mean, every war has been created indirectly by these. This influence, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And if you read, what's that guy's name? Colin Andrews' book, Ashes of Angels. It's a great book. He talks about this history of these babies, these magical babies that are born. And they're all white, and they have white hair and chalk white skin. And some tribes, you know, were fearful of these children, and they killed them.
Mm-hmm.
And some tribes thought that these children were some kind of exalted being, and they raised them up into exaltedness within the tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And these beings frequently had red hair. Red hair because the overabundance of iron oxide in the air on Mars causing red hair. And so they exalted these beings. And these were the European tribes who exalted these beings, had sex with them, with these children. And read his books; they're very interesting. And he talks.
Well, I will. I'll check that out for sure.
And so I think like the Africans have a history of you know killing albino children right when they're born. I don't know if you know that, but they're Yeah, they're considered wicked. You can Google it. You know, African tribe albino children, and you can see that they. They think that they're wicked or there's something bad about them. And so this is a long tradition where they would get rid of these angel demon children. And get rid of them. And so the Aryan influences are more prevalent among the European stock cultures. And so they became the vehicle for the real Aryans that have nothing to do with white people at all, actually, except for leaving behind some genetic trace, to do their bidding. And so that's what's been going on. Skull and Bones is a part of this group. Michael Tessarian has traced a lot of this, these German groups back. The German groups are the key. Once you start back engineering the German groups, you can find everything. The Saturnian Society, Aleister Crowley, all of the UFO stuff from South America, all this stuff is all intertwined into a cohesive story that makes total sense and gets rid of a lot of the gobbledygook, but it's backed up and bolstered by very, very serious ancient texts, Puranic texts, and Vedic texts, which tell the whole story very clearly.
Well, how does that tie into the idea that that there are different ages? In other words, do we ever get out from under the prison bars of some kind of highly advanced extraterrestrial civilization that controls us without our knowing? Isn't there supposed to be a golden age after the Iron Age?
Well, it is, but here's the thing, is that this is really the crux of the matter. The only way that you can have a golden age, what happens is that through the long cycle of the yugas, which is really called a kalpa, which is all of the cycles together, there are so many deaths. And as you approach the Bronze Age and the Kali Yuga, there's more and more deaths of violent nature. And it takes thousands and thousands of years for bones to vanish. The earth becomes haunted by an inescapable presence called the Ka from Egypt, which is a residual that's left behind. And the only way that you can have a golden age is for all of the Ka to be burned away so that the earth is completely renewed. And unfortunately, these guys, these Aryans, broke the rules. They didn't want to die in the last catastrophe, which they had to do. That was part of the deal. The earth could only be renewed if all of the Ka goes. And they escaped, and they went away, and they kept all of the knowledge that had been gathered from the previous kalpa, and which you're also supposed to lose. So you start out in a pristine state, again, and they broke the rules. And this is why Tessarian's work is so good, because these guys broke the rules, and now they're now we're just their slaves. Now racism has come into it. Whereas before there was no racism, now there's a racism. The earth peoples are too stupid. The earth peoples are too dumb. And it's not dumb or stupid. They never had the advanced technology carried over from the Dark Age to the Golden Age, or should have been a Golden Age. And this is the problem. And so there has to be a cleansing of the earth so that it can be renewed, and they're not allowing that to happen, and they keep bringing back the same genetic strains when actually the earth is constantly rolling the dice and searching for new genetic strains that it can use to embrace and place consciousness in. The Aryans keep bringing back all the old structures. This is why corn is a hybrid. You know that, right?
Yeah,
corn is a hybrid. When they discovered corn, even to this day, it was a hybrid. Somebody had messed with it a long time ago.
It's all genetically modified.
Well, it is, and that's. And again, you have to ask yourself why that's being allowed, and why all the forests are being cut down, and why
are the chemtrails and HARP?
Those are to keep us away from seeing what is going on behind our backs, which is a gigantic evacuation, they don't care about us anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, now, it seems like there ought to be some kind of higher authority that, let's just call it the cosmic patrol that oversees what's fair and what's not fair. In other words, aren't there some kinds of higher and more advanced ETs or civilizations or angelic realms or whatever that can put things straight?
Well, there may be, but we don't know.
We just know this much.
We know as much as we know, and that's all we know. They say that there are. The Vedic texts say that the devas, which have been destroyed through this current Kali Yuga, According to the text, the divas, you know, have gone back to the Godhead. They left, you know, thousands of years ago to travel back to the Godhead to tell the Godhead that the Archons, who are the Aryans, by the way, that the evil Archons had taken over the entire planet and that they needed, you know, help because the divas had been driven off the planet. The divas, of course, are the nature spirits.
And
as Tolkien shows us very clearly in The Lord of the Rings, Sauron and Sargon are destroying nature to fuel and finance some mysterious project. And if you go back and look and see in history, you know, who Sauron is, it's obvious that he's talking about Sargon. Sargon was the head of the first real king of the Kali Yuga in Mesopotamia. He started calendars, he started clocks, he started the workday, he started everything. And he was an Aryan. And so you can see that there's this regimented thing that starts entering in and removes us from the natural state of a highly advanced hunter-gatherer, which is really what human beings are. And that's our natural state. You know, very close to the earth, no agriculture, all fresh foods, a lot of hunting, a lot of gathering. Very spiritual, though, not a grunting life, but a wonderful, beautiful life filled with meditation and a much higher standard of living, which was what was going on before the Aryans emerged.
Now, is there any connection between the Aryans and then the German Aryans that were involved with one of the world wars?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, all of the German Nazis were obsessed with the lore of a people that lived under the earth.
The Nordics, weren't they?
Yes, and they were obsessed with it. And Hitler even told people that he had met the new man, i.e., the Aryans, that he is terrible. He said. And they received all of their technology, the Bell technology, which was the mercury, spinning mercury, which powered the UFOs. They received all of that stuff from the Aryans. They had contacted them and told them what to do, where to go. And that's how the Nazis from 1930 to 1945 did the most astonishing advances ever in human history. They invented the laser, UFOs, they invented radar, they invented, there's so many things, television, so many things that it's ridiculous. No group of people could ever do that. But they did it, and by the way, you know, this was all being financed by the Rothschilds and England and America, including George Bush's grandfather.
That's right.
And it's all coming out of Skull and Bones. And Skull and Bones has a number, a secret number that no one knows what it means. And the number is 322.
Huh.
Yeah, well, 322 is quite obvious. It's the first day of Aries. Okay, Aries is Mars. Mars is March. March is the only planet that's, or only month that's named after a planet. All alchemy begins in Aries.
Wow.
So these are the alchemists, and these are the high magicians, and these are the Great White Brotherhood. Kut Humi, who talked to Blavatsky, was an Aryan. You could go on and on.
And then,
the king of the world, according to the Tibetans, lives in an underground city named Shambhala underneath the Himalayas, and he's chalk white.
Huh.
Yep.
And then, of course, we know, this is common knowledge, that we brought over all the Nazi scientists through Project Paperclip and installed them in high positions, including, I think, the top of NASA.
Well, absolutely they did. And Wernher von Braun told Carol Rose and his paramour, you know, right near his death, he said, you'll see, in the end, they'll say all of this was caused by the aliens. And he started laughing. Wow. Yeah, that's
wow.
Right from the horse's mouth. And listen, though, there's more than just that. It's been pretty much proven beyond any shadow of a doubt that the entire bottom third of South America was given over to the Nazis at the end of World War II. And
mm-hmm.
that was their country, and they owned both sides, Chile and Argentina.
Wow.
And they ran them. Pinochet was their puppet, and so was the other guy. I forget his name. The Argentinian dictator that was there for years and years. And if you ever got close to anything that they were doing in the mountains, you were disappeared.
Wow.
In Argentina, thousands and thousands of people were disappeared. Hikers would get near these Nazi facilities where they were building these huge craft, and they would disappear. And if you look at Jacques Vallée's work on where UFO sightings and where they are and how many there have been and all of that, which he did copious work for 30 years, you'll find that 75% of UFO sightings are in the bottom third of South America.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
They're building. You can type in Santiago, Chile, December 2008, and watch the YouTube video of about 40 craft flying over Santiago. I think you can almost see them waving out the windows.
Jeez.
See you later, suckers.
Wow. Well, what in the heck are we going to do about all this? What can
well,
be done?
You know, here's the thing. We don't know. And, you know, I'm not saying there is going to be this thing because these people could be as wacky as they come.
Yeah.
I think, actually, their number... here's the thing. Their original number was 2442. That was when they said that the end of the Kali Yuga was coming, according to these ancient texts.
Uh-huh.
And I think that they found out by deciphering the long count calendar in the late 1880s
uh-huh.
that there may be a chance that it isn't 2442, but it's 2012.
Yeah.
And so they hit the pedal to the metal and created the 20th century and got out of Dodge, and they're up there, but there may still be 400 years left. Yeah, I mean, their number system definitely says 2442. It's a big mystery that we're all trying to uncover and figure out. It's very interesting, very interesting. The entire... number system that these people use have been using since they arrived here is a higher dimensional or hyperdimensional number system.
Mm.
And there's only three places on Earth that the architecture that we've looked at. No, there's many places on Earth that use their numerical system, this hyperdimensional numerical system,
mm-hmm.
but the three places on Earth that have it the most are Giza, the Great Pyramid of Giza, Stonehenge, and the U.S. Capitol.
Huh.
And I'm talking about knowledge that no one knows about, that
wow.
would have been almost, you would think, nearly impossible for the guys that built the U.S. Capitol to know, yet they did.
Well, Dan Brown just came out with another one of his thrillers about the U.S. Capitol.
Yeah, well, they're doing it, but when The Sacred Geometry of Time comes out by Robert Lawler, they'll put Dan Brown and the rest of them right in their place.
Well, of course, they're thriller writers. They're
yeah.
not esoteric scholars by any means.
No, Dan Brown's an apologist for the Freemasons. That book is an apology for the Freemasons. The guy, what's his name, Ronnie Howard, who made Angels and Demons and the other book, The Da Vinci Code, based on his books, he's a Freemason.
Oh,
so
I didn't
the Freemasons
know
have their agenda, and their agenda is to get out of Dodge and
yeah.
leave us all here, and that's long the truth of it. A lot of people are doing things. Patrick Gerrell's going to someplace in Africa where there's deep caves. I'm heading to Peru. You know, there's people that are doing things. There's things you can do.
What about building a boat?
Well, it will work. The problem, if you can get past that initial coronal mass ejection, then the resultant tidal waves and you know, expected 400-mile-an-hour winds, you know, my buddy Cliff High is building a boat. I know that, and it's a pretty cool boat.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking about buying one myself just in case.
I just read his article on that, and my jaw dropped on it. It was almost like reading your articles. It was like,
yes.
You know, just chock full of hidden meaning, and at least that's what I got out of it. You can take it on a literal level, of course, but there's a lot more there than meets the eye, I think. And
yeah,
he's going to be coming back on the show soon, I hope.
Well, there's kind of a strange thing going on where there's just a certain percentage of people that get it, and they really don't even need to discuss it anymore. And
Cliff
and I are in that group, and you know, it's like, well, if you don't see it, that's your problem. You know, we're taking care of business.
Right.
He's building a boat. I'm headed to South America.
Right. I'm probably going to stay right here. I just have no desire to, for whatever reason, I've been stationed here. And so...
There's not a whole lot you can do.
Really isn't. Not,
a matter of luck, even in a boat.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And with my resources, I wouldn't get further than leaving California, probably.
Yeah,
but I do
know
that the military is building underground bases as fast as you can flip pancakes at Sambo's.
Sure, they are.
So, you know, they're just scurrying around, but that's not going to help any either.
Well, I think that the air would get sucked out of them, and then you got the crust moving around. I don't know. I wouldn't think it's a good idea.
I wouldn't. It doesn't appeal to me.
No. I'm just joking. I'm probably not going to South America. I'll just take a deep breath and hope I get through it. I've had a good life already, so
yeah.
I feel sorry for the other people if it happens. I don't concern my life actually with disasters and things. I'm actually glad the Aryans are leaving, and I hope we get a 400-year reprieve and maybe longer from them. I think they've been a terrible influence on the planet, and they've left a wrecked planet behind. And
terrible.
We've got to pick the mess up, and so I don't really appreciate it, and I hope they did take a few pot shots at them as they were scooting out of Dodge, frankly.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about them. So,
yeah.
You know, if Obama's got a terrible mess to handle, and I don't pity politicians, but at the same time, boy, I'll tell you, I wouldn't want to be there now.
There's been a lot of talk about disclosure happening very soon that was supposed to happen on the television. It was the time was scheduled and everything.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you when disclosure happened.
When?
Just about the last hour. That's the disclosure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the disclosure. Anything else is not just not there. And David Wilcott going out of his way to say there's going to be a disclosure, and he thinks that there's going to be these aliens landing and everything. I'm sorry, I love David. He's a great guy, but no, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
Disclosure is that they're leaving. And the people in the know and people like Cliff High or a lot of other people already know all this. They know what's going on. You can look at it on the web. You can see him in Ed Grimsley's glasses going through the night sky. No, we know what's going on.
Wow.
And believe me, there's Gary McKinnon is being extradited to the U.S. or cracking into the Pentagon's bases. He says there's a secret space program with gigantic ships and hundreds of thousands of personnel. Probably most of the missing people of the last 30 or 40 years is, well, I didn't want to say what happened to them, but you get the idea.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, we know that they've had free technology and... Well, you know, it's just about time for us to fly out of here ourselves.
There you go.
Would you mention your websites again?
SacredMysteries.com has all my videos, including the new Infinity, the Ultimate Trip, Journey Beyond Death, my new film, and JWidener.com has all my high weirdness articles. So just go there or just type in Jay Widener on Google and look at all the nice things that people say and the nasty things people say about
you. Well, I can't believe anybody would say anything nasty about you, Jay. You're a terrific guy, and I love having you on the show, and you'll have to come back again soon, okay?
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, and be sure and go check out his articles and his website because I'm telling you it's mind-blowing. All right, thanks a lot, Jay, and good night, everybody.